Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is the evening of March 22nd, 2023. It is basically 24 hours since Shohei Ohtani struck out Mike Trout to wrap up the World Baseball Classic and win it for Team Japan in probably the most epic baseball fashion that we've seen in the sport as a whole in I don't even know how long. I mean, we've obviously had some great Game 7 walk-off moments in World Series history. We've seen plenty of big moments in the sport itself, but for the first time, we got a chance to watch an event that wasn't just your classic standard issue Major League Baseball captivate the world and also set the stage up in perhaps the biggest fashion it possibly could be with two of the best players who have ever played the game and probably two of the best players who exist in the sport of baseball today. So that's where we are. It's a week before opening day. The Cincinnati Reds have opening day on March 30th. This is when this drops tonight. It'll be basically 7 days before that starts. So we're doing our best to get caught up in the world of baseball, where it is now, where it's going to be over the course of the next week. I'm Wick. I'm your host here at Walks Will Haunt. Thanks for coming back to join us. We had a little bit of a lull time, in part because it's cold season, and I've been fighting through that as my two-year-old brought home basically everything she possibly could from Montessori earlier this week. So apologies for the deep voice and the sniffles and the inevitable cough that's going to happen here in a little bit. But we're going to power through and kind of set the stage for what we've seen across the sport and what that means for the Cincinnati Reds. So I think there's no way we can talk about baseball right now without talking about the World Baseball Classic, despite what Chris Russo and Major League MLB Network want you to think about the event. That was some of the most kick-ass stuff that I've watched, period. It was electric. The crowd was electric. The teams themselves were having more fun than I think I've seen teams have play the sport of baseball at any level in a really, really, really damn long time. And on top of that, the level of play was tremendous. It wasn't just that it was a big kind of exhibition event. We were seeing tremendous hitting, tremendous pitching, timely plays, all that stuff. So let's start there. Joining me tonight, we've got Mitchell Clark and Brandon Kraling of Red Reporter fame. Guys, let's just jump right into some World Baseball Classic events. PK, we can talk about Ohtani obviously winning MVP and doing the two-way stuff better than anybody we've ever seen before. Talk about him a little bit, but also what are your overall thoughts on where the World Baseball Classic kind of fit into this particular landscape and where it goes going forward after such a great display?
Yeah, I mean, man, what an awesome event just in general. But, you know, I feel like we, you know, tend to follow it over at Red Reporter. You know, obviously we went to a game when we went to spring training a couple of years ago, had a lot of fun doing that. But, you know, it's, I think that it is currently like the best display for baseball. It's the best advertising you could possibly have for the sport, you know, around the world. And, you know, you had a lot of, you know, countries like even, you know, Great Britain who kind of made a couple of waves. I think they won one game. And so, you know, they got their first win and had some momentum behind it. So, you know, I said this kind of, you know, to you guys, but I am not sure that we're going to see an event this season with that is better than that last at bat, you know, the, you know, ninth inning, 3-2 count, two outs, you know, basically the best hitter on the planet versus his teammate, who's probably another Hall of Famer. You know, it's just, I don't know how we're going to top that this year.
Yeah. I mean, it was that, but it was also, I mean, it was the eighth inning. It was Yu Darvish against Kyle Schwarber, and Schwarber fouled off, what, 5-6 balls, all of which you could tell he was totally locked in on. and hits the home run to set the stage for the ninth inning. Like, we're talking about the guys that were in the World Series last year in Schwarber. Yeah. We're talking in Darvish, perhaps the biggest, before Shohei Ohtani, the biggest international star who came out of the 2009 World Baseball Classic also. I mean, it was like, it was the biggest stars on the, what I think might be the biggest stage. I mean, as big as the World Series.
I mean, if you look at how many, you know, I don't know if the numbers are out for the viewership of that yet, but, and even the game before that, you know, was the Japan-Mexico the night before, you know, Mexico is up 3-0 and Japan, their new guy, the Red Sox guy, I'm blanking on his name, but he hits the, you know, 3-run homer to tie the game, and it kind of goes back and forth through the late innings. And it's just it was just an awesome game. Just seeing all the passion and seeing, you know, the excitement, and it's not something you ever get in March, you know, outside of basketball. Right. So
yeah. Masataka Yoshida, who was the big, the big Yoshida splash of the Red Sox offseason. Yeah. I mean, a walk-off win there. You know, we saw the best players on the planet representing teams that we've not really paid too much attention to them representing, which happen to be their countries. But, you know, it's almost like you look at where the entire sport has been over the last 4-ish years. Pandemic, obviously, you know, no fans in stands, shortened 2020 season, the lockout, you know, all of that ended up postponing the World Baseball Classic for a year. So we got an extra year to wait for all this. It really kind of seemed like it's not baseball's coming out party, but it was almost like baseball's rebrand, you know, it was a very big breath of fresh air to the entire sport, because, you know, you never know when you're going to see some of that stuff. And like, you know, for all of us that, you know, we watch soccer, we watch international soccer. You look up sometimes and you see some team playing on an AstroTurf field somewhere, and you're like, what is this? You know, whatever. Like, there was none of that. Like, it was all at the highest level. It was the, you know, tremendous players throwing their hardest, you know, pitching on back-to-back days. They weren't rotating lineups just to make people happy. They were playing their best players. It really was a fantastic, fantastic display, and one that I hope they try their best to live up to again, because it was one of the tremendous baseball moments I've watched. And I say that, you know, we're here to talk about the Cincinnati Reds, and we are going to get to the Cincinnati Reds here shortly, I swear.
Of the Reds, though, I mean, with all the, you know, how did Japan win? They won this tournament without the help of Shogo Akiyama. He wasn't even on the team.
How did they do it?
That's just a testament to the resiliency of that team to not have their far and away their best player.
There should be leadoff hitter. R 40. What are your thoughts, man? We talked right past you there for a little bit, but I know you got a chance to watch some of it as well. What were your thoughts on the World Baseball Classic?
Yeah, well, I was just thinking last night, I was watching, I was like, man, this is the most excited I've been about baseball in a while. I mean, obviously, we're all Reds fans here, and things have been pretty bleak around the organization. But even like with some of these World Series matchups we had, and like there have been some great series and stuff. But I was just like blown away last night by the atmosphere and just the level of competition, you know, that I was watching. I was like, you know, the game ended with Mike Trout versus Shohei Ohtani, but the at-bat before was Mookie Betts versus Shohei Ohtani. Like,
right.
And, you know, Betts had a guy on base and like a chance to tie it right there or take the lead right there. And, you know, and so it was just like every at-bat was so much pressure and just such high level. You know, then I was thinking back to the last World Baseball Classic. What was it, 2017? When the U.S. won it, and wasn't it? I can't remember the year off the top of my head. But
2019.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, man, this is like finally such a big event, and then like this one topped it, you know. So it leaves a lot of hope that they can build on that, because it's actually gotten better every time they've done it, and it's not something that they've messed up. They've actually been able to build on it, because last World Baseball Classic, when, you know, you have Adam Jones robbing that home run, and then the U.S. ended up winning the final by, you know, I think it was like 6-0 or something like that. It was a a pretty like lopsided victory. But then you go into this one and it seems like every single night, each game was like really close, high level.
There wasn't
awesome atmosphere.
There wasn't like a blowout really, you know?
Yeah.
Like, towards
there were a couple, you know, I mean, I think the U.S. blew out, you know, had a pretty sizable
second game, I think. Yeah.
But in the later stages, like they were all really
close. Every single game was close and came down to the end. And like, you know, you just see the atmosphere in the crowd and yeah, it was awesome. Like I was so pumped up last night after watching that. Cause I mean, we, like you said, like that may be the best like competition we get all season.
Yeah.
Which and I mean, unfortunately is kind of sad. Like,
I mean, right. What's going to top that? March, you know? But it almost is almost like a soccer parallel, right? Just, you know, the World Cup being bigger than any kind of individual, you know, soccer league out there, you know, there's obviously a debate there, I guess, but, you know, you have, it almost reminds me of like, you know, it seems like, cause with kind of the Premier League and all the kind of international imports that kind of brought with it. And, you know, it kind of became a league of global, you know, superstars, and it feels kind of like baseball is like on that same trajectory. And you know, we're seeing not, you know, the home dominance of the the U.S. team actually doing great things, but you know, they're actually, you know, other teams that are, you know, out there and really kind of showing off their stuff. And you know, you have, you know, Great Britain and actually making that tournament and doing well, and it's awesome. That's all you can say about it.
And then let's even like to like take some of the subplots real quick, and then I swear we will talk about the Reds here in a minute, but this was too damn fun not to focus on the two biggest stories I think that happened in all this were Edwin Diaz closing out a game and immediately hurting himself and requiring massive knee surgery the moment after he just signed his 9-figure contract with the Mets in the offseason, and some of the immediate reactionary stuff, which was, you know, why is he even playing in this? Why are the big league clubs risking their key investments in tournaments like this and exhibitions like this? And kind of the initial fallout of all of that, which immediately got great pushback as far as I'm concerned, which is that you watch the players have as much fun as they've had in their lives playing baseball, and that's why they're doing it, contracts be damned. And so with that as the backdrop, to then see Shohei Ohtani, who's in his free agent year, as the only two-way player in baseball, the best two-way player in baseball, one of the five best pitchers in baseball, and one of the five best hitters in baseball. If he hurts himself right now, you know, he doing anything, I mean, he's literally about to get a $500 million contract from somewhere, yet you're watching him running back and forth to the bullpen and to the dugout so he can be ready to pitch while also be ready to hit in a game, one game against the United States, because it meant that much to him. It really kind of, it flushed that entire, like, reactionary view of like, well, why are these investments out there playing for an exhibition, and said, no, bullshit. This is baseball at its finest. This is the best in the world stepping up to play as passionately as they possibly could. I thought that all transpired in what, 5 days, 4 days?
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, I think you brought up a good point. It's like, this one is kind of the first one that felt not just like an exhibition. You know, I think all the previous ones, you know, you know, definitely followed them and, you know, I, you know, enjoyed watching them, but they still kind of felt like glorified exhibitions. Whereas this one felt like more important than anything going on in the world of baseball.
Yeah.
You look at the, like, while the Japanese team was celebrating, like, you look at the reactions of the U.S. team, like, they're all just sitting in the dugout, like watching the celebration as if they had just lost the World Series. Like they weren't just like, all right, pack it up.
I definitely got that feeling too.
Truly disappointed.
Yeah. I will say, I think what this World Baseball Classic, it gave us was you know, for people that, that watch 162 game regular seasons and then incredibly long drawn out 5 and 7 game series with expanded playoffs that keep expanding, it's often hard to focus on single elimination contests like this and feel like you actually got an accurate representation of how the teams were and how good they were. We got that. You know, it was small sample size baseball, which is very hard often to trust in terms of like the results. It was right. Small sample size baseball, and it was still exactly how it should have turned out. You know, right. Like I think the best team won yeah. with the best player.
Definitely. That, yeah. You know? And when you look at it, it's like, you know, they could have done 3-game series and stuff, or, you know, but would that have been as exciting as the, you know, 1-game winner take all? Like it is almost like the NCAA tournament in terms of just like
right.
how yes. that yeah. structure just making for a more exciting event.
And if somebody gets hurt in three best of three series, then somebody's like, it's too long. You can't do this. You've got to shorten it. And
right.
then you worry the product gets diluted and all that other stuff. No, they kept it as short as they possibly could. And it was still as electric as you could have ever hoped for. It was Game 7 every night with the best players out there, the best pitchers available. And it worked, you know, it really worked. So that was,
they found something. Yeah. With this one.
No doubt about it. So, Team Canada, here we go as a segue. Team Canada did not have Joey Votto as their first baseman this year for, I believe, the first time since he's been a big leaguer. He has pretty much always represented Team Canada, unless I'm overlooking a year. They had to settle for Freddie Freeman, which was a pretty good 1A until he got hurt also. Yeah, but we're watching the Reds up 2-0 in the bottom of the fourth right now. Kurt Casale, old friend Kurt Casale, back with the Reds for this year. Joey Votto's back. He's officially back as of about a week ago. He smoked a double in the first inning of this game, which is probably the hardest hit ball he's put in play in a Cactus League game since he's been back. But because of how the Reds have set up the roster with Kurt Casale and Luke Maley and Tyler Stevenson, and Tyler Stevenson wanting to play a lot of first base, according to the Reds. Well, no, that's a bad phrase. He doesn't want to play first base. The Reds want him to play first base a lot more to keep him healthy. But we've now got Joey Votto back in the mix. Tyler Stevenson trying to not catch more than 60 to 65 games. Will Myers, who was the big free agent signing. I say big with quotation marks here for all those who can't see me. We've finally started to get a little bit more of a ebb and flow to this Reds roster. With a week to go, in large part because Votto's back and looks like he should be ready to go for opening day and everything's falling in place around him. I guess let's just take a large step back look at what the position players look like on this current roster. And what do we know? Like, do we know anything? Is there a single person out there that we really feel like we know what they're going to do this year? Like, I don't think I've ever had nobody that I have any idea what they're going to do before. And I have no idea what anyone is going to do.
Maybe the aforementioned Kurt Casale is probably the closest. Like, you know, you can pretty much count on, you know, what he gives you. But, you know, I think there's question marks pretty much throughout the whole roster, you know, really.
Yeah. Like Kurt Casale is going to give you about a 740 OPS and about 190 at bats, right? Like, got cool.
Right.
He's
a backup catcher.
He's a backup catcher who has a backup in Luke Maley also. So we don't know exactly how that's going to work. Who's going to be in the personal catchers for any of the trio of talented young starters. What are your thoughts on Joey Votto this year? Maybe we start there. What can we expect from Joey in his swan song season?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like I've been so like out of tune with what the Reds have been doing in the spring and stuff up until like the last like week, I guess. But, you know, it's funny the night he smokes a, you know, 110 mile an hour double off the wall. I'm like sitting here like trying to put some notes together and stuff and saying like it's probably going to be pretty tough to expect the production that we've gotten from him coming off a rotator cuff surgery at, you know, almost age 40, you know. It's just like, I have no idea what to expect from him. Like if he's been playing this hurt for the last few years and now he's finally healthy, then I'm like, okay, great. Let's, you know, let's hope we get back to that, at least somewhere close to that 2017, 2018 production. But again, he's also almost 40 years old. So, you know, any normal 40-year-old coming off a rotator cuff surgery isn't going to be as strong as they used to be. And so, yeah, I have no idea, you know, if what his power is going to look like, at least on a consistent basis. You know, he's obviously going to run into some balls like he did tonight, but yeah, I'm interested to see that. And I mean, I hate to say that because it is his last year, and it's like, we've seen so much of what Joey Votto can do, like, and just how consistent he's been over his career. But man, that's a tough surgery to come off of, you know, at that age. Shoulders are difficult for baseball players. And I mean, at least it's not his throwing shoulder. And, you know, obviously it being a first baseman, that's less of an impact, but yeah, he's trying to get a lot of power from that, from that left side. And yeah, it's going to be hard to do. So, I mean, if there's someone that can do it, you know, I would not count Joey Votto out, but yeah, at that age, yeah, I have no idea what to expect from him.
Yeah. That's a good point that you bring up, though, about it being his last contract season, because I think that is something that, you know, Reds fans in general really haven't thought about at all since he came up, you know, because he got that really long-term deal, you know, really early on in his career as a Red. So it was like, you know, I think we'll start seeing the question this year. And I think that is going to definitely be a subplot of this season with Joey Votto.
Yeah. I mean, there's no shifting this year, or limited shifting, I should say. You're still allowed to shift a little bit, but you still have to have players on opposite sides of second base and whatnot. And you can't have them in the outfield. How much of that is going to be potentially a rebound help for him this year? We have no idea what baseball is going to do with the balls this year. Obviously they were juiced as hell in 2021. He figured it out and started changing his swing to approach it that way, hit 36 home runs and looked like the Joey Votto we always knew. How well is he going to be able to adjust to all of that on top of a shredded bicep and a rotator cuff and all the other things? He looks kind of spry. Like, he doesn't look like he's like favoring things right now, in very limited sample that we've seen so far in the spring. But I think it's pretty clear that, like, he's not riding off in the sunset this year just because it's his last guaranteed year under contract. And I think, given who he is as a player and who he's always been as a player and a person, I think there's going to be a little bit of chip on his shoulder this year. To where, you know, he's not just going to ride it out and then nobody's going to offer him a contract in the winter and then he retires. I think he wants to play beyond this year. I know he wants to play beyond this year. And he knows he's going to have to perform to be able to get a contract to do that. So the question is going to very much be like, how, you know, what that does to fuel the already incredibly competitive fire that is Joey Votto, and how that propels him going forward. But I think it's probably the biggest early season storyline for the Reds. You know,
provide.
What can he provide and how quickly? I mean, he's made a pretty good habit, not a habit on purpose, but he's not been the quickest of starters over the last half dozen years. You know, how quickly can he pick it up and get it going before all the questions start coming down about, you know, is he done and did the surgery do him in? And this is his last year. Is he going to retire? Is he going to retire? Is he going to retire? And all those questions are going to flood in. You know, he comes out the first 2 weeks of the season and socks 3 or 4 home runs and walks more than he strikes out. A lot of that will shut up pretty quickly, I think. But he's going to have a very short window to be able to kind of set that narrative before it begins to seep in. And for a Reds club that doesn't look like it's going anywhere at all this year, you know, Spencer Steer is probably going to start at third base this year to begin the season, but, you know, quote unquote, their best top prospects are still all going to be in the minors. Nobody's breaking camp with the club. You know, Elliot De La Cruz is going to be up at some point, hopefully in July, maybe. There's an early season window where what Votto is and how this team kind of finds itself, it's going to be a big story. And so how quickly he can hit the ground running, I think, is important. If for no other reason that I don't want him to have a microphone in his face after every single plate appearance, you know, is this the one? Did you feel like you still have it? Are you going to retire after this year? Like all that crap that, you know, he's just trying to work himself back into game shape. And I think that's going to be interesting to see how all of that develops because, well, let's be honest. If the Reds decide not to go 3-22 to start a season, it'll also take a lot of the pressure off of Joey Votto. So hopefully they can win some damn games to start this season and not have all the writing me on the wall. So I guess beyond Joey, we can look at some of the other defining characteristics of what looks like the continually evolving opening day roster. We got some more injury updates today. None of them really good, but some of them pretty defining about what we can expect for opening day. It sounds like Lucas Sims and Luke Weaver are both going to miss the start of the season. So you've got one of the very precious few guaranteed free agent contracts that were given out this winter in Luke Weaver, now out of the opening day rotation. Lucas Sims, one of the guys who you hoped you'd have back to help bolster a bullpen that was miserable last year and that got no guaranteed contract money given to it this winter. He's going to be out alongside TJ Antone. So we've now got TJ Antone, Lucas Sims, Tony Santillan all out to start the year from the bullpen perspective. Luke Weaver's out. Justin Dunn's out for longer than Luke Weaver. The pitching staff's starting to look a little top-heavy. And I say top-heavy not because it's got Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray, and Tyler Malley cemented atop of it. It's got three guys who were all rookies last year that we're kind of just banking on being like good and known quantities at this point, because behind them, both in the rotation and in the bullpen, holy shit, there's some question marks, man. Arf, what are your thoughts on Cincinnati Reds pitching right now, considering it's not exactly been a strong suit of theirs to begin with, and who's left doesn't exactly look super formidable anymore.
You know, I guess there's Alexis Diaz, you know, fresh off the World Baseball Classic.
Assuming the Mets bullpen, don't trade for him. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Man, it's not great. You know, we've got Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo who have had good springs. You know, Graham Ashcraft had a decent season last year. But man, after that, you know, we've got Luis Sessa, who hasn't, I think last season was his first season in the rotation since 2018. And
something, you know, he's like got that, like
a 4-5 ERA as a starter, where he's been much more effective out of the bullpen in his career. I mean, he's plugging in as our fourth starter. So, and then, you know, we've got like Chase Anderson in there. And
Connor Overton, so. I think, is probably going to be in the mix. Which, yeah, you know, he'll lead innings, but you're not going to get good innings necessarily.
Yeah, so, I mean,
it's crazy to be thinking about that in March and April, right? It's like, he's a guy that, you know, if he's in your rotation in September, it's not the end of the world. But, you know, if that guy's – somebody with that kind of resume is breaking camp with you and you're, you know, expecting a lot out of – you know, it's going to be a long season.
Right. And let's be honest, I said the three guys who were rookies last year, that's a pretty lump sum statement there. Like that could be 12 runs of wins above replacement between Graham Ashcraft and Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo. They're very good guys who were rookies last year, but
yeah,
at the same point, you have to say, you know, they were rookies last year. They're all pre-arb guys who are in their early 20s. Like, you want them to be the anchors of the next good Reds team. So you're not going to try to push them to like 210 innings this year just to get through the season. If you're already scaling back the three guys that you know you have, where do you turn after this? You know, there's no Scott Feldman sitting around here like hoping you soak up 200 innings there. You're not bringing back Bronson Arroyo. And on top of that, whereas the position player prospects on the farm are all ready and bubbling to come up and take jobs, there's not a whole lot on the pitching side that's really quote unquote ready right now. I mean, Brandon Williamson, we hope is, but he didn't look really like it in the spring. He had a tremendous opportunity to seize a job and didn't do it. Andrew Abbott looks like he's got a lot of talent in that left arm also, but still hasn't reached AAA yet. We're hoping he's something, but like, to just assume that they're going to jump right in and just take the reins and run with it. Like, that's still five incredibly young arms that you're asking to like get through an entire 162 game season.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like the Reds are like two like big innings eaters away from like just stomaching the season. And those guys aren't around. I honestly don't know where they're going to go for innings right now.
Well, right. Cause the one guy that you got kind of for that purpose in Luke Weaver is going to start the season on the DL. Right. So,
yeah,
you know,
and even then, you know, the last time Luke Weaver threw over 100 innings in a season.
I do. It was with the Cardinals. It was three organizations ago.
Okay. Yeah, 2018. So, yeah. Like, even then, like, he threw 35 right. innings last year, and they were all out of the bullpen. I think he maybe made one start last season.
Yeah, and so we got relievers turned starters, like Luis Sessa, who threw two innings with Team Mexico. It was like, I got to get out of here because I got to get stretched out for the season. Like,
that's your number maybe four starter. They just make their pitching staff 14 relievers, just – you know, no starters, just vibes, you know?
You know, speaking of the World Baseball Classic, I do believe Alex Blandino is currently still unsigned. So if he really wants to work on that double ball.
I love it. He could be the third starter by next week.
Seriously. So, yeah, it's you know, of all the things that the Reds have done and committing to seasons beyond 2023 is probably the most polite way I can put it. The fact that they didn't just like, you know, put it this way, when you go out and you drink beer and you know, you got to get up and do something the next morning, what do? You throw a bunch of bread and potatoes and anything you possibly can in your stomach before you go to bed. So when you wake up the next day, like it's been consumed and you feel a lot better and you're not worse off for it. Right. Right. We've all been there. We know this. It's like the Reds didn't do any of that. You know, they've gone carb lean and they need carbs in the worst way just to literally stomach the innings. They just need something to consume innings so that their best pitchers, their best and brightest young pitchers aren't hung out to dry throughout the course of the season. And I literally just, I mean, we're going to see Chase Anderson pitch 170 innings this year. It's kind of what it looks
like. And that's, I mean, and yeah, if you look at like, you know, you use the example with the three kind of second year guys, you know, hey, like it'd be awesome if we got, you know, 12 wins above replacement from those guys. But what happens if, you know, they start the season and they're collectively one win above replacement or, you know, less than that, right? It's like it could go south really quickly, and you would love the luxury of being able to kind of send a guy down to Louisville to work on some stuff, and you know, but the Reds aren't going to have that because they don't have the guys waiting in the wings at this point. And like I feel like these are conversations that, you know, even when the Reds aren't good, we don't have these conversations until August and September, where we're having this before the season.
Yeah.
I mean,
and we're talking
and
about
like
you guys
not
also
to mention.
Sorry, Arf, go ahead.
Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo missed, you know, a decent amount of time last year with injuries. Like, and it's not a guarantee that they're going to get through
I
this
whole
season.
I can't imagine both of those guys making, you know, 30-something starts. Like, that would be really surprising.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like the Cincinnati Reds probably aren't going to be quite as exciting this year as the World Baseball Classic was.
Yeah,
I will say I'm watching Graham Ashcraft. I'm watching Graham Ashcraft pitch into the top of the sixth right now, with no runs on the board against an admittedly very threadbare San Diego Padres lineup because all of their players were playing in the World Baseball Classic this spring. I like the talent they've got there. Like, they've got good pieces specifically in the starting rotation, and if the Reds are going to surprise this year, and by surprise, I don't mean you're going to look up in May and they're 13 games over 500 and leading the Central. I mean that they're not 13 games under 500 and didn't start 3-22. It's going to be because they've got three incredibly talented, very, very good and promising young arms kind of leading the rotation. And that's cool. There are cool, good pieces on this Reds team. And that's why we're all going to still watch. It's not like they're terrible and they have nothing on the 26-man roster.
Yeah.
They've got a really good like 15-man roster right now. Like, they do. Right. It's just those other 11 spots where you're like, what the hell are they doing here? You know?
You know, I think that, you know, one thing that, like, one positive note that I'll say is, like, you know, I'm the only one on here that is local to Cincinnati. And, like, yes, I'm looking forward to going down to the ballpark this summer. And, you know, tickets are going to be cheap. You know, there's still tickets for opening day available a week before the season, which is nuts. But, you know, the tickets, there's going to be things to watch with this team that make me excited to go down to the ballpark and see them. So, you know, I don't even get Valley, Ohio, or any of that. So, like, that's really going to be the best way for me to watch the Reds this year, is actually in person.
That's awesome.
But I'm excited to watch Hunter Green pitch. I'm excited to see Nick Lodolo. I want to see Ellie when he comes up. I want to see what Jonathan India can do. If Tyler Stevenson could stay healthy. Like, Joey Votto, right? Like, there are lots of pieces here that will be exciting to follow and exciting to watch. But, you know, it's really just I think that the cynicism, you know, on our part really comes from the lack of direction and strategy behind the other, you know, 15 spots on the roster.
Exactly. Like, if we're going to watch Chase Anderson pitch every fifth day and Kevin Newman starting at shortstop and Chad Pinder's in left field and Luke Bailey's behind the plate, and then 5 days later, it's the same thing. Like, that's going to get really old really quick, because it doesn't have to be that way. The other days, there's going to be a lot of promise for sure. I will give the Reds some benefit of the doubt as we kind of try to wrap up here. It can't be worse than last year, I don't think. There aren't lumbering old gigantic contract sluggers that can't stay on the field. There is promise at a lot of the spots, for sure. And nobody can be more injured than the Reds were last year. I mean, everybody was hurt last year. Jonathan India was decimated. Tyler Stevenson decimated. Joey Votto decimated by injuries. You got to think that at least some of that's going to regress. Jake Fraley was hurt last year. Will Myers wasn't on the Reds last year, but was also hurt last year. Like, some of that is going to have to be better this year than last year. Jose Barrero was coming off a major wrist surgery all of last year and was terrible. You know, some of those are going to be much, much better this year. If a couple of them are better this year, it's going to start shining a whole new light on things. And that's the optimism. That's what we're all looking forward to. It sucks that we're going to have to wait another year to find out if that's something worth building around or not, as opposed to being optimistic about that and also having a actually legitimate Major League Baseball team to root for in the meantime. But fact is, the 15 to 16 good pieces of their 26-man roster that we are looking forward to watching this year, there's excitement there. There is. There very much is. And so hopefully that's enough to kind of carry the Reds through. And once again, I'll just reiterate, just don't start 3-22. You know, just get us to mid-May or June, where we're not like the talk of how bad baseball has become in towns like Cincinnati, because just give us a glimmer of hope and the fans will begin to start rallying around that. I guarantee that. So,
yeah.
I guess I'll wrap this up with a little bit of insight on where we are going with Walks Will Hunt. This should be our first official published podcast with the Fans First Sports Network, which we're excited to join up. It's a bunch of podcasts that basically used to be affiliated with a lot of the SB Nation sites, both baseball, football, basketball, hockey, soccer, all across the sporting spectrum. That kind of got cut loose by Vox and SB Nation over the last couple months, have banded together to put together this new Fans First Sports Network. And we're excited to be a part of it as kind of representatives of the Cincinnati Reds in that regard. And we're looking forward to tweaking our coverage to kind of bring you podcasts about where the Reds are, both in the majors and the minors, where Joey Votto is in his kind of transition towards potential free agency and where he might go in his last guaranteed year as a member of the Cincinnati Reds. It's a new avenue for us in the audio realm, and we're pretty excited to kind of jump into that. But this is our first official one with that as Walks Will Hunt. So kind of keep an eye out on where we go with this. We'll have kind of evolving updates as they go. But we're excited to kind of get this started as the red season gets started here in the next week also. So thanks for tuning in. I'm Wick. I'm your host here, and I appreciate you joining us on Walks Will Hunt. For BK and for Mitchell Clark, also known as the Arkansas Reds fan. I keep calling him Arf. I should probably explain that at the start. Sorry, Arf. Thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to having you around this time next week. Thanks, y'all.